reading from the Jiva Dharma, chapter, what is it, 18, but it's Pramaya, Veda Veda Tattva. Pramaya means what is to be known, and Pramana means the process of knowing it. So there, they were studying the Dashamula. So there was one pramana and nine pramaya, one means of knowing and nine things to be known. And Vrajanath is studying them. As you remember, this is the story of people coming to Krishna consciousness after the generation after Lord Chaitanya. And there were short stories about different people coming, and according to their who they were, then a different tattva was required to enlighten them. Just like different people may come to us, and from a caste Brahmin, one particular tattva is required to enlighten them. They know they're not the body in one way, but another way they don't. It's a gross materialist, another tattva. A Maya body, another tattva. So in this way, all the tattvas are described in this book. And then it finally comes up to this person called, he's Nayaratna Chudamani. He's a logician, and he somehow becomes converted to Krishna consciousness under the guidance of Raghunath Das Babaji. And through Vrajanath's education in the story, we will learn systematically all the tattvas of Krishna consciousness. In fact, when I wrote The Ways of Devotion, and I was studying this, studying Nectar of Devotion, I realized that last half of the book, the last quarter of the book, is just questions and answers, but really it's actually a summary of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and then the Ujjvala Nilamani, which is a extended commentary on the fifth chapter, the Western Division of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So now we're following Rajanath's education, his inquisitiveness, and that's so important in Krishna consciousness. Inquisitiveness is important because it's the expression of inquisitiveness is the expression of our faith, our awakening. The first budding of faith is just a desire for the truth. And most people don't want that because it's too threatening. Acceptance of the truth removes from our environment things that we're attached to and puts things into our environment, things that we have aversion to. So that's the beginning of spiritual life. Coming to that point of wanting to be ruled by truth, and that desire is reciprocated by the Supreme Lord by sending us Guru. And therefore, the inquiry is the continuance of that desire for truth, taking advantage of God's reciprocation with that desire by sending us a qualified teacher to instruct us. So watching this relationship of education, and there's also a subplot here that Vrajanath doesn't want to get married, and he's under a lot of family pressure, especially has one cousin. And a cousin is envious of God and envious of the devotees, and finally comes to the point where he's going to teach him a lesson by ambushing him on his way every day from I believe, Shantipur to Srivat Sangam. And Rajanath gets word of this, and his guru tells him, you know, don't go at night. So he restricts his going out of apprehension, a fear of his life, we could say, but not a necessary fear, but reasonable fear. And then one of Rajanath's, I know he was a Brahmin and he had some property, and one of his tenants was very dedicated to him, was expert in stick fighting. And when he found out about this, he was going to, Rajanath started to take him with him because he was very expert at martial arts. And he resumed, because he said, a while he couldn't go because he had no protection. Now he was going with Harish. But he had to leave very early and he couldn't discuss tattva. And he became very, very dissatisfied of this thirst for education. And it's not gyan, it's bhakti. This is education about devotional service. So it's bhakti. So, you know, he remained dissatisfied within himself. And, you know, it's 20 days had passed like that. And then his husband, who was ugly, was bit by a snake and died. And then Rajanath heard the news and he thought maybe because he was the envy of a Vaishnava. That's also, you know, Shastra. It can destroy everything. Even the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's mentioned when Ramachandra Khan disrespected Haridas Thakur. No, disrespected Lord Nityananda. And Krishna's Kaviraj quotes, for the sin of one man, the whole village will be destroyed. Just a little side story on that regard. Anyway, I'll tell it anyway. Bhakti Bhai Bhav Purimaj was Prabhupada's godbrother. And he was the most favorable godbrother of all the godbrothers. And he was, somehow or other, one temple invited him, you know, and he was very innocent. So, you know, he came, and it was on Radhastami. When he got there, somehow or other, some leaders or something felt threatened that some Gaudiya Math Sannyasi was going to come to this temple, although he was quite innocent. He was invited. He was just invited by an Indian temple president. And so he came. And it was on Radhastami, and someone was already sitting there. So an offense was committed. We're not obligated to invite. You're not obligated to invite people. But if they're invited, you're obligated to host them, especially when they came for that purpose. So later, I was... About two days later, I was driving upstate with Pradyumna and his wife, Arundhati, who was, you know, they were very close with Prabhupada, and she was missing Prabhupada's association, and they had gone to Bhakti Bhai Bhav Puri Maharaj's ashram. So she had gone there, and he heard him speak, and when she got there, she was so disappointed, and she told Pradyumna. And I was driving up in the car with Pradyumna, and he said, you better get your seeds. I said, what do you mean? He said, you better get your seeds. I said, what do you mean? And then he said, there's going to be trouble. I said, what? He said, did you hear what happened to Bhakti Bhai Bhav Puri Maharaj? You know, he was insulted. He was invited, and then when he came, someone else was sitting there. And then Pradyumna quoted that verse, that for the fault of, and this is in Chaitanya Charitamrita, for the fault of one man, the whole village will be destroyed. And that was Ramachandra Khan. And then because he insulted Lord Nityananda, then the village was later ravaged. So, you know, Pradyumna told me that, you know, and he quoted from the Shastra. And because something comes after something, it doesn't mean it caused it, but whatever we want to say, that was September 8th, 2001. And three days later was 9/11. And, you know, this is a little bit, I want to get into the story, but it was also interesting that when Bhakti Puri Maharaj, he was a Vaishnava. So he, you know, he didn't cause any thing. And he asked the devotees to take him to the World Trade Center. This old Vaishnava went up in the elevator and he chanted all the way up to the top and on the top. And people opened the elevator and seeing this pure devotee chanting Hare Krishna. And that was the World Trade Tower. So maybe many of the people there were also liberated because their last impression was hearing the pure name of Krishna. Anyway, that's another story, but very, very careful about Vaishnava Aparad. Because he says, did he meet his fate because of his envy of the Vaishnavas? And I'm reading in the sixth verse of the Sri Upadeshamrita that, you know, you should never look at a devotee externally. And there's a whole section of some of the commentaries that means even when they commit something wrong, that when you look at poison in someone, poison comes to you. When you try to remove poison from somebody, the poison can come to you. So Vaishnavism is very strict in that regard. You know, if we look at the faults of people, their faults will come to us. And if we look at the good, then their good will come to us. So, anyway, Rajanath asked if this, but then he concluded, no, his allotted lifespan has finished, and so he died. And then, quoted from the Bhagavatam, Adyav Habta Satan Deva Mityurvai Praninam Dhuva. One may die today or after 100 years, but death is sure for every living entity. This is an eternal truth. So they're both true. You will get reactions from Vaishnav Aparad, the Matahata offense, the mad elephant offense. You put a fence around your garden, but if an elephant comes in, everything is destroyed. So, but anyway, because he's a Vaishnava, he has the allotted span, and that's also Shastra. When you're born, your birth, your death, and your boga, it's already determined. It's already fixed. When we are going to die is already fixed. It could be tomorrow, it could be in 10 years, it could be in 50 years. So now my path to Sri Vasanda in Mayapur is clear. So you'll see, he's coming to Krishna consciousness, but there's obstacles. And there's always obstacles. Obstacles are meant to make us stronger. Just like Mao Zedong, he was captured in the corner of China by the nationalist army of Chiang Kai-shek. Anyway, and then he made a brilliant maneuver to escape. But the escape route was through the jungle, over mountains, through water. The nationalist army was following him. And sometimes they had to walk for days in swamps, you know, up to their chests. And he crossed all the way across China. And 9 out of every 10 men died. But those people that were left were so determined, they spread communism all over China. So there's tests, and Vrajanath's having tests. His family's opposing, an envious person opposes. But the devotee sees in that person's illusion of the external energy, the internal energy, because it's Krishna. And Krishna is sending people. To purify us. And therefore, in the Upadeshamrita, one of the qualities of bhakti is that a devotee is patient. Patient, understanding the value of the goal, and therefore able to tolerate even the worst troubles as a minor price to attain it. So we'll see this in Vrajanath. And that day, Vrajanath reached Srivas Angam a little after dusk. He offered his obeisances to Raghunath Das Babaji and said, "From today, I will be able to come to serve your lotus feet every day. The obstacles in the form of Vaini Madhava have left the world." At first, the soft-hearted Babaji became a little disturbed on hearing about the death of this spiritually unconscious persons. Anudita Vivak Jiva. There were five types of jivas. One was completely covered, one was partially covered. Then there was, anyway, three types of human beings, according to, including the sadhaka and the prema bhakta. So, and the spiritually unconscious human. There's spiritually unconscious human, there's spiritually conscious human, and there's perfected conscious human. So he felt compassion. Soft-hearted Babaji Maharaj became a little disturbed. The nature of a Vaishnav is that he feels for others, but not to the extent that it will cloud his vision on how to act. Sukarma phala bhupuman. Karma, everyone enjoys or suffers the result of his karma, he says. The jiva belongs to Krishna and he will go wherever Krishna sends him. Anyway, Baba, I hope you have no other anxiety. Rajadat. Only one. I have missed hearing your nectarian talks all day. Today I want to hear the remaining instructions on Dashamula. Babaji, I'm always available for you. Now, where do we stop last time? Are there any questions in your heart after our last conversation? Rajanath, what is the name of Gaur Kishore's pure and invaluable philosophical teaching? So remember, the last subject was how the jiva got liberated from Maya by meeting, and how the jiva was entangled in Maya and how the jiva became liberated by the association of a devotee. I think that was the seventh Dashamula. And then it ended with Raghunath Das Babaji describing that there's two types of liberated persons. There's the Nitya Mukta Jiva and the Vada Mukta Jiva. One who is eternally liberated, and one who was eternally conditioned and then achieved perfection. And the eternally liberated, according to Jivadharma, they can't come from the effulgence of Lord Balaram. No, there's something else, sorry. Then there's three divisions of the Nitya Vada Mukta, the eternally liberated soul. There's two divisions, one who desires to serve in reverence and therefore wants the object of their love in Aishwarya or opulence, and then there's one that Madhurya, he wants the was attracted to Krishna, he, Madhurya, the object of his love, should be intimate and therefore not superior, so there can be sweetness. And the ones that are eternally liberated but attracted to Aishwarya, they come from the halo of Mahasankarshan, and the jivas who are attracted to Krishna come from Balaram. And then the Buddha Mukta jivas, those who were conditioned and have become liberated, there are three. Those who seek Krishna, those who seek Narayan, and those who seek the Brahmajyoti to merge. Those who seek Narayan get the liberation of Salokya Mukya Mukti. They take birth on a planet of Narayan. And those who are seeking Krishna take birth on Krishna Lila Loka. And those who seek the Brahmachyoti get Suyuja Mukti. They merge. And then he asks, what is the destination of the devotees of Gauranga Mahaprabhu? And he explained that the difference between Krishna and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or Gauranga Mahaprabhu, the difference is, one second, I gotta remember this point. I'm determined to remember, just wait on. Okay, the devotees of, or the difference between Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, in Krishna, Madhurya is more prominent than Audharya. Sweetness or intimacy in relationship is more prominent than magnanimity. And in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, magnanimity or Audharya is more prominent than Madhurya. And a devotee can go to either Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's planet. He just worships Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Or he can go to Krishna if he just worships Krishna, or if he worships them both. Inconceivably, he can be in both places. So, okay, now Vrajanath continues. What is the name of Gaurakishore's pure and invaluable philosophical teachings? Now, listen carefully, because this is kind of, again, we're getting into a heavy philosophical section with long purports, but I'll try to break it up. So, what are their teachings? And now, Vrajanath mentions of the previous acharyas, they have established different philosophical systems. And he names them Advaitavad, the school of Advaita, Dvaitavad, dualism, Dvaitavad, exclusive monism, Shuddha Advaitavad, pure monism, the Shishta Advaitavad, specific monism, and Dvaita Dvaitavad, dualism with monism. Has Sri Gauranga Dev accepted any of these, or has he found a different school? When you were instructing me about the disciplic succession, you said that Sri Gauranga Dev belonged to the Brahma Sampradaya. In that case, we should consider him to be an Acharya of Madhvacharya's Dvaitavad. So basically, Vrajanath, every school has an interpretation of the Vedanta Sutra, which is a summary of the Vedas by the author of the Vedas, Vyas. And they have a different interpretation of the basic philosophical teaching is, what is God's relationship and our relationship with this material world? So there's difference. Dvaitavad says it's completely different, the material and spiritual world. And Advaitavad says that all distinction is illusion, so the material world doesn't even exist. And Shuddha Advaitavad says the material world exists, but it's actually non-different than the spiritual world. So they all have a little bit of a technical difference of how the philosophy informs our relationship with the material world. So Babaji answers, Raghunath Das Babaji, Baba, you should hear the 8th sloka of Dashamula. So now, this subject matter of God's relationship with the world in terms of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta, he's going to explain it. In terms of the 8th sloka of Dashamula, which he has been already explaining. So he says, Hare Shakti Sarvam Chid Achid Akilam Syat Harinati Vivartam No Satyam Shrutim Iti Varudham Kalimulam. Hare Bedha Bedho Shruti Vihita Tattvam Suvi Malam Tata Premna Siddhir Pavati Nitaram Nitya Vishaye. The entire spiritual and material creation is a manifestation of Sri Krishna's Shakti. The impersonal philosophy of illusion, Vivartavad, is false. It is an impurity that has been produced by Kali Yuga and is contrary to the teachings of the Vedas. The Vedas support the Chintya Veda Veda Tattva, inconceivable oneness and difference, as the pure and absolute doctrine, and one can attain perfect love for the eternal absolute when he accepts this principle. So now Babaji Maharaj is going to explain what exactly is the Vaishnava conception of this world. It's a chintya veda veda tattva. It's one and different from God, as opposed to Madhva Acharya, which is Dvaitavad, different, and Advaitavad, where it's illusory, and Shuddha Advaitavad, which is, it's completely spiritual. The conclusive teachings of the Upanishads are known as Vedanta. In order to bring the precise meaning to light, Vyasadeva compiled a book of four chapters called Brahma Sutra or Vedanta Sutra. So the author of the Vedas, the philosophical section is the Upanishads, and Vyasadeva wanted to really elucidate that meaning, and he did it in sutra form, which is very common. Each school generally has a sutra or codifies the teachings for its memorization and assimilation. In the Vedas command great respect amongst, the Vedanta commands great respect amongst the intellectual class. In principle, the Vedanta Sutra is widely accepted as the proper exposition of the truth taught in the Vedas. From this Vedanta Sutra, the different acharyas extract different conclusions which are just suitable to support their own philosophy. Sri Shankar Acharya has used Vedanta Sutra to support his impersonal theory of illusion, which is called Vivartavad. He said that one compromises the very essence of Brahma, Brahman, if one accepts any transformation in Brahma, that the doctrine of transformation, Parinamvad, is therefore completely faulty, and that Vivartavad is the only reasonable philosophy. Basically stated, Shankaracharya's point is if the absolute truth transforms, it's not eternal, because it's not an eternal substance, because it changes. Things that change are temporary. Therefore, any transformations in the absolute truth must be vivarta, they must be illusory. And therefore the doctrine of transformation, that there are distinctions and things that are manifest from God, is completely false. And that vivartavad is the only reasonable philosophy. According to his own needs, Sri Shankaracharya collected some Vedic mantras support his Vivartavad, which is also known as Mayavad. We can understand from this that Parinamvad has been popular from early times, and that Sri Shankar checked its acceptance by establishing Vivartavad, which is a sectarian doctrine. So this all is one Advaita Vedanta. That any transformations, any distinctions, even your own self as being an individual distinct from God, Purush, Vishesha Purush, their conception is that this must be illusion. That doctrine, which today basically before Prabhupada and his followers were preaching, became, Advaita Vedanta became the predominant understanding of reality and of this world But we're saying here it was a newly introduced doctrine, and before that, this conception of parinamvad, that there is distinction to the absolute truth, and the absolute can transform in many ways, that was the popular view. And in fact, even technically today, philosophically, Advaita Vedanta, the six darshans, is a minority school, maybe one school within one of the darshans of the six philosophies. Srimad Madhvacharya was dissatisfied with Vivartavad, so he propounded the doctrine of dualism, Dvaitavad, which he also supported with statements from the Vedas to suit his own purpose. So Madhvacharya then was specifically, his mission was to impose Shankaracharya and said, no, the world is not false. There is a spiritual world, and this world is completely different. And he supported that with statements. Similarly, Ramanujacharya taught specific monism, the Shishta Advaitvad. Sri Nimba Ditya Acharya taught dualism with monism, Dvaita Dvaitavad. And Sri Vishnu Swami taught pure dualism, Shuddha Advaitvad. So there's four sampradayas. And from Lakshmi comes Vishnu Swami. From the Kumaras comes Nimbark Acharya. And from Goddess Lakshmi comes Ramanuja Acharya. And from Lord Brahma comes Madhva Acharya. So they all, the four Vaishnav sampradayas, all have different views, as does the impersonalist from Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya's Mayavad philosophy is opposed to the big basic principles of bhakti. Yeah, it's imposed, because if everything is one, there's no love. Love is an exchange. So those who want to say all is one, then your love is an illusion. And your love, so it's against the principle of bhakti, who propounds that the ultimate reality is rasa vaisaha, from the Tattatirya Upanishads, rasa vaisaha, that the ultimate reality is rasa. It's an exchange of love. So within that absolute reality, within that one absolute reality, there are separated parts and parcels outside that absolute reality, but within it. It's within it, but outside, for the exchange of love. There's nothing outside of God, but God to enjoy love, which is an energy that comes to one from outside of oneself. God has created separated parts and parcels to be receptors of those love, of receptacles of his divine love, which is the essence of his pleasure potency. And from them, from the living entities, that love can flow from their hearts to the heart of God, and that's God's pleasure. Each of the Vaishnavacharyas has claimed that his principles are based on bhakti, although there are differences between the various philosophies that they taught. So they all accept that they all are against Mayavad. They all accept bhakti. They claim that their principles are based on bhakti, all the Vaishnavacharyas. But there's some differences philosophically. And therefore, there's different philosophical doctrines that are the theme of their understanding. Srimad Mahaprabhu accepted all the Vedic conclusions with due respect and gave their essence in his own instructions. Mahaprabhu taught the doctrine of achintya-bheda-bheda-tattva, inconceivable difference in oneness. He remained within the sampradaya of Madhvacharya, but still, Srimad Mahaprabhu only accepted the essence of Madhvacharya's doctrine. So only God can establish his sampradaya, yes, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is God. Prajanath, what is the doctrine of Parinamvad, transformation? a long purport. I don't know if we're going to finish it. Okay, we'll start. There are two kinds of Parinam Vad. Parinam Brahma, Parinam Vad, the doctrine of transformation of Brahma, and Tat Shakti Parinam Vad, the teaching of the transformation of energy. So he's going to make a point here that the transformation in the absolute truth does not diminish its eternal nature, because it's done through its shaktis, which have inconceivable potency. So the sun, all the sun rays are coming, but the sun still seems to be the same. And that's the first verse, or it's the invocation of the Upadeshamrita. Om Purnam Adat Purnam Idam Purnat Purnat Udachite Purnam Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnameva Vishishite. The Supreme Personality of God, it is perfect and complete. And even though so many units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. Those who believe in Brahma Parinanvad, the transformation of Brahma, Brahman, say that the Achintya, inconceivable, and Nirvishesha, formless Brahman, transfer itself into both living beings and the inert material world. To support this belief, they quote from the Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.1, Ekam Evadityam. Before the manifestation of this universe, there existed only the absolute truth, a non-dual tattva that exists in truth. Anyway, this is going to be explaining, I guess, the Mayavad. So it gives some reference. Ekam evad dutiya dutiyam. Before the manifestation of the universe, there existed only the absolute truth, a non-dual tattva that exists in truth. According to this Vedic mantra, Brahma is the one and only Vastu that we should accept. The theory is also known as non-dualism or Dvaitavad. Look, in this theory, the word Parinam, progressive transformation, is used, but the actual process that it describes is actually Vikara, destruction or deformation. So it's describing that if there's living entities and there's energy and this world exists, then there's a Vikara, or a destruction or deformation of the absolute reality, and therefore it must be false. Those who teach transformation of energy, Shakti Parinamvad, do not accept any of these sort of transformation in Brahman. So this is our philosophy, that God, energy is emanating from him, but he does not change, as energy emanates from the sun, but the sun does not change. Rather, they say that the inconceivable Shakti or potency of Brahman is transformed. The Jiva Shakti portion of the potency of Brahman transforms into the individual spirit Jivas, and the Maya Shakti portion transforms into the material world. According to this theory, there is Parinam, transformation, but not of Brahman. So our viewpoint is this transformation, but of energy, because God has inconceivable potencies. And that's the very, very definition of God. And therefore, in that his inconceivable potencies, he can manifest. From that absolute truth comes unlimited energy, without that absolute truth or Brahman transforming. His energy transforms into different things. So he has eternal energies. God has eternal, Brahman, God has eternal energies. So they never change. The energies never change Brahman, but the energies themselves get transformed. So he quotes from Vedanta Sar of Sadanand. Satatvato nyata udhir vikara it yudarita. The word vikara, manifestation, means that something appears to be what is factually not. Brahman is accepted as a vastu, basic substance, from which two separate products appear, namely the individual souls and the material world. The appearance of substance that are different in nature from the original substance is known as vikara, modification. What is this vikara? It is just something appearing to be what is actually not. For example, milk is transformed into yogurt. Although yogurt is milk, it is called yogurt, and this yogurt is the vikara of the modification of the original substance, in this case, milk. According to Brahma Parinam Vad, the material world and the jivas are the vikara of Brahman. So therefore, they must be illusion. That's what this is, the Brahma Brahman Parinam Vad. The impersonalist view is they must be illusion, because there can't be a transformation in the absolute truth. Without any doubt, this idea is absolutely impure for the following reasons. Those who put forward this theory accept the existence of only one substance, namely the Nirvishesh Brahma. But how can this Brahma be modified into a second substance if nothing exists apart from it? The theory itself does not allow for the modification of Brahman. So if the theory is that there can't be any transformation in Brahman, then how can there be illusion? That means there's something else besides Brahman. And therefore, it's a self-contradictory theory, because they have no explanation for the living entities and the material world. They say it's illusion. But it contradicts their theories, because then there's illusion and there's God. So there is some duality. There is something else. And that's what he's saying. Accepting modification of Brahman defies logic, which is why Brahman Parinam Vada is not reasonable under any circumstance. However, there's no such fault in Shakti Parinam Vada, the transformation of energies. Because according to this philosophy, Brahman remains unaltered at all times. Bhagavan's inconceivable Shakti that makes the impossible possible, agatana gatana, patiyasi shakti, has an atomic particle which is transformed at some places, the individual souls, and it also has a shadow portion which is transformed into other places, into the material universe. When Brahma desired, let there be living entities, the Jiva Shakti part of the superior potency, Parashakti, immediately produced innumerable souls. Similarly, when Brahman desired the existence of the material world, the Maya potency, the shadow form of Parashakti, at once manifested the unfathomable, inanimate material world. Brahman accepts these changes, while remaining free from change itself. So that's our theory, that by the inconceivable potency, the absolute reality manifests into the living entities in the material world, but by its shaktis, it itself remains the same. Okay, I'm going to stop here. Anybody like to ask any questions? Okay, can someone say hello? Is anybody there? Was I speaking to the wall again?
Hare Krishna.
Okay, Chaitanya Priya. Thank you. Now I know someone's there. Thank you. Good. Anybody else like to say hello? Anybody else say hello today?
Hare Krishna.
Gail, okay, good. The stalwarts are there.
Yeah, actually, I had trouble unmuting, so I did have a question, though.
Okay, ask the question.
Okay, wait. Let me try and take this off speaker. Hold on. Okay, Maharaj?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess my question is due to having a little trouble with Achintya Beta. I'm trying to... I know there's the analogy of the milk and the yogurt, but I'm trying to understand how the jivas, who are part of God, who is unchanging, and even the jivas themselves, they are, you know, eternally unchanging. You know, that's why they call it eternal, but yet they can fall into illusion. So I'm trying to reconcile this, that this change can occur, yet God is still called, unchanged.
Well, it says that Brahman has inconceivable potencies. And therefore, as mentioned in the first verse of the Sri Upanishads, the Supreme Personality of God is perfect and complete. And even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains a complete balance. It's reasonable to accept that that one immutable, unchanging reality has inconceivable potencies. And therefore, it has energy that can come from itself without changing itself. And to look at it any other way is to actually make the unreasonable imposition that God is confined to the laws of material nature.
So basically, therefore, inconceivable means that you simply have to accept that he can do that, and not subject him to logic.
Say that again.
So, accepting his inconceivable potencies means that you simply have to accept at face value that he can do even what appears to defy logic.
Of course he can defy logic, because logic is based on the laws of cause and effect. That's the material energy. Of course God can defy logic. This logic is based on what? It's based on the laws of. It's based on the laws of, in this world, and God's not subjected to those laws.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Gail. Okay.
Can I ask
anybody? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I just ask one other thing?
Separate thing.
Going back to that story of Bhakti. Purnabhai Bhava Maharaj?
Yeah.
Is the conclusion that, so it's not that he caused 9/11, but is it safe to assume that therefore, Krishna was Krishna's
response? I'm not assuming anything. I just thought it was an interesting coincidence, at the least. That Pradyumna said that to me 3 days before the World Trade Tower. Pradyumna quoted that verse in the CC for the offense of one man, a whole village is destroyed. So I don't know what caused what or what's after that, but certainly that Shastra is an effect for offense, so we have to be careful. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Krishna. Thank you. Good. One or two more, and then we'll go. Thank you all for listening. This is good stuff. This is good stuff. I think I can explain this. And each week I'll go over it. Okay, Vanchukalpa Chuchu.